comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all over this gorgeous planet, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted to be here. I think you'll be delighted as well. And we're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. We publish every week a free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files, and we'd like for you to be getting it. Now, nobody can fix it except you if you're not getting it. Only you. So what you do is you go over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. And then you're going to get an email that has a link in it, and you need to click that to activate your subscription. You do that, you're in. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we never loan these email addresses out to our email list. We don't loan it, rent it, sell it, none of that stuff. It's just for the K-Files. So you will not be spammed as a result of having subscribed, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to, but most people stay with us forever, and we'd love to have you in the K-Files family as well. We also have a members community. The members community is really just one of the best things on earth. This show is 100% listener supported. You don't support, we're not here. It's that simple. And it's only $7.50 a month. That comes out to 25 cents a day. You can't beat it anywhere on this planet. It's the best deal going. It's where the archives are, the forums, the chat room, Video Galaxy, your own blog, your own photo album. You get to watch the show every night, and lots more. Look, it's just the best thing going. You won't miss the $7.50, but it could mean the difference in whether we get to keep broadcasting or not. And we prefer to be able to keep broadcasting. If that's what you prefer, then we invite you to join our members community. Just click where it says join. All right. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Joe Montaldo. Now, a lot of you know Joe Montaldo. He does all different kinds of radio, but he is also the owner of one of the networks carrying the Kevin Smith Show, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. He's the owner of a radio station in New Orleans that carries the show, and he's the director of ICAR, which is really a very active group investigating the UFO and abduction phenomena. Lots of interesting information has come out of that. And we are going to be chatting all over the place tonight about all different kinds of topics. Recently, he has encountered something that I have encountered, and we're going to talk about that as well tonight. We know that there are others like us who have encountered similar things, and we just kind of wonder openly what's up. You'll know all about that in just a moment. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening is Joe Montaldo, and I'm going to begin. Joe, welcome to the show, by the way.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be on, man. I always love coming and hanging out with you.
Well, and we enjoy it as well. Now, I want to begin with something that our listeners know about, you might not know about. Last night, we had Lee Allen on from the Paravisions show and from Paravisions organization. And right at the beginning of the show, on the radio feed, it dropped out of stereo. I've never had it do that. Now, you have to understand, folks, that the audio that's going to both the television channel and the radio feeds is the same audio. It's exactly the same. Comes out of the same mixer and passes through both of those broadcast computers. It's the same audio. So we had stereo over here on the television computer, and it dropped out of stereo over on the radio computer. But Joe, during the breaks when it would play music, it was in stereo.
Doesn't surprise me, by the way, not even a little bit. I mean, from the people I've talked to in the last 30 days with these outrageously weird audio glitches, stuff that never goes away, breaks, computers going awry, doing things on their own and stuff. I know all of us run a lot of equipment. You know, in order to do these radio stations and to carry as many venues as we do, we all have to run multiple servers just to get what we're looking for. Some more than others, but you know, and stuff breaks, but not like it has been lately. I mean, I can think of 7 decent-sized radio networks that have all had not baby problems, but big ones. You know, whole servers going down where they couldn't get their stations up and running. Some of them losing internet connections for 2 and 3 days. That's unheard of. I mean, just all around, and then a lot of them having, having multiple problems. I mean, myself, I mean, we had one of the weirdest glitches I've ever seen. I fried a lot of hard drives in my time and a lot of motherboards. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, but I had a motherboard that decided it was going to go out. Somehow or another, it corrupted an entire hard drive, a terabyte hard drive, just ate it to pieces, along with a gig of RAM. An audio card, and there was no lightning, no power surges, because there's actually 11 computers here, or 9 computers here connected to the station, all running from the same power sources. So if we get a surge, we're not losing one, we're losing all of them. And that's why they're all in surge protectors to boot. I have no idea what caused this. And then while I'm putting this together, putting a new one together, we get a bad hard drive in, which is odd. And while that's going on, all of a sudden, my AT&T U-verse, which has run perfect since the day I've had it, just quit working. I mean, no TV, no phone, no internet, no nothing, just poof. 3 texts, still poof. One guy finally comes out, he said, oh, well, it looks like a little wire here, and that was the problem, and poof, it's back on. And wait, the wire is in place, it was cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, what the hell? I have no idea what this was, so I'm talking to a friend of mine who owns another radio network, and we're talking, he's just going on and on. I've lost 3 servers in the last 2 weeks. He said I was without internet for 3 or 4 days. I'm like, what are you talking about? I thought he was messing with me, Kevin, to be honest with you. So it was about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I had heard you had a problem. And then when we talked today, I had heard you had one. And then my boys over at Para TV lost their broadcast for 3 days. Still don't even know why. They just, their 2 TV servers would not broadcast on the 3rd day. The guy just figured he was going to have to rebuild them all, started them both up, and they worked perfectly.
Well, yeah, it's been very weird stuff. Folks, Joe was supposed to be with us, week before last, and he was going to be with us the night that server locked up, okay? It had been throwing off some strange problems that I'd been trying to deal with, and doing some weird things, starting music when it wasn't supposed to, and not turning music off when it was supposed to, and just doing some weird stuff. But then the night that Joe was to be with us is the night that server locked up. And while you never knew it, I just pressed forward and tried to make things happen. And we did the show that night with a laptop. I couldn't do Skype. I couldn't do telephones. We just did it with a laptop because the main server was down and the computers that hooked to it, well, they were hooked to it, but they couldn't get anything out of it. And so it was just weird stuff. And then, as you know, I eventually just wiped that disk out, reinstalled everything, and we lost a few things, but it's back up and running. But the reason I wanted you to hear this, folks, is it's not just here.
Oh, no, it's all over. It's weird. And you know, I would say, okay, a few paranormal radio stations. Oh, no, guys. Was it KTX TV and it was either Las Vegas or somewhere in Nevada, lost broadcast for 3 days. I've heard about some bigger radio stations out in California losing broadcast for 2 days. It's almost like, you know, and I hate conspiracies. Y'all know how anybody who's listened to me. But it's almost like somebody's testing some kind of thing out to see if they can just interfere with broadcasts. And what's funny about this is almost every broadcast we talk to is internet-based. Now, we do broadcast on FM along with the FM stations in California and other people, but everyone has internet-based their stations now because they can broadcast it and even pick it out and send it over FM. They don't have to make any difference. In the old days, you had to use all the radio equipment, which was a much bigger deal. Today, they can use their internet connection and then send the signal back into their radio thing and blast it out. So everything's internet-based. Now, not everything, but a lot of it is. So if you can interfere with those internets, you can interfere with a lot of communication these days, and especially communication that's not always the norm, meaning we're not the everyday media, and we're much more likely to talk about things that the government may not want you to talk about. So, you know, I don't like conspiracy theories, but I got to say, this one is just a bit odd for me.
This one smells a bit too much like fish.
It does.
Yeah.
It just got that ring about something's not quite right here. And, you know, I know, you know, we're up to almost 9 million weekly listeners. So I know it's a good place to test something out like that is with us. And trust me, buddy, I was getting emails nonstop.
I did too.
The bad part was they were going to my cell phone. You know, I'm like, my poor little i3 or whatever it is. Yeah, I think it's an i3. I mean, it was just the poor thing couldn't even hardly work anymore.
Well, you know, I got a lot of emails too, and people were angry, and not everybody. Most people were just great about it and just concerned, wanted to know what was going on. But some were angry and like, I'm supposed to work miracles or something, you know. It is true I walk on water, but it is not true I can raise anybody from the dead. And I can't raise computers from the dead. So, yes. Well, it's not exactly true that I walk on water either. So, but the point is, yes, I do work miracles here with these computers. But this was beyond anything I had ever faced. And I've been at this for a long time like you have, Joe. And I just never seen anything like what we were dealing with. And there was no solution for it. Except just to wipe it out and start over.
And the scary part is, usually when this kind of stuff happens en masse on the internet, someone takes credit for it. No one's taking credit for this, nowhere. As a matter of fact, it's almost like it's taboo to talk about on the internet, because I've talked to a couple other radio stations, and they're like, well, Joe, I know people have had this problem too. I mean, we could probably go over with at least 100, 150 people right now. And the thing about it is no one's taking credit for it, but everybody was having similar problems in losing broadcasts. you know, I even thought, because I got a backup 3-meg Cox cable connection in the house, I really thought about putting reruns on that, or my office across the street with a whatchamacallit connection. So I was going to just run over there and hook it up and just, you know, queue up a couple hundred reruns and just let it run. But fortunately, AT&T, after I had a conniption fit, came out and got it fixed. But in all fairness, I don't want to hate on them, because I called them and I really kind of lost my cool. Because first they gave me somebody in India. So I'm like, hello, Mr. Montaldo. do you understand what I am saying? I'm thinking the whole time, no, I don't. And he's, well, Mr. Montalvo, let me send you a kit to fix your internet. Right then and there, I lost my marbles, by the way, okay? Let me send you a kit to fix my internet.
Both thinking, marbles? Really,
dude, you gotta be kidding me, right? This is a radio station. So after I calmed down, he said, well, I'll get you somebody out there this afternoon. And they did. And the guy was a moron, and he couldn't find the problem. And the next day, they sent some other morons. And then finally, one of the monkeys stumbled across the problem and fixed it. But if it would have been any normal person, or any sane person for that matter, I would still be waiting for internet connection right now.
Well, not too many people have accused you of being normal, have they?
No, but, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. And I really know this for a fact, like Cox Cable and a couple of people I deal with, Sprint and Microsoft, all have a thing with my name on it that says Tier 4 support. Even GoDaddy does, by the way, and so does Newegg, because I do so much stuff with them. They don't want to waste my time. Because I get really mad when I got to start, and the little kid's telling me, and you can hear him flipping his book going, press this. I'm like, dude, I've done all of that. Don't even go there. I've been done this a million times. No, give me somebody else. And after a while, you know, because I do, I spend a lot of money on these people. So I want service. I don't want any BS. I want real service. And so now, over the years of griping, screaming, and getting my squeaky wheel oiled, they've put me on tier four support on most of them. So when I call in, it's automatic. They just send me there, and usually, between us, we can usually figure out what's going on. I tell you what, there was one problem with a USB I had on a Windows XP Pro system. They actually had to go find the guy who wrote it. He still worked for him. It took him a week to come up with the guy. The guy's like 90 years old. He calls me on the phone. He says, okay, Mr. Montalvo, we're going to work this out. And he took him 3 days, but he got it fixed. Basically, well, he wrote all the software in my computer. He got it fixed.
Well, the point that I wanted to make right here at the beginning of the show, and I wanted everybody to know, I wanted you to hear, because, you know, I tell you that it's not just here. It is happening other places. Well, I wanted you to hear, and it's not just other shows. It's stations and it's networks that are being hit. Now, nobody really knows anything about this. I mean, is it organized? Is it planned? Or is this just a whole big clump of coincidences, which I don't think that's the case. But we don't know, but it is happening. And how many times have I told you folks how important it is when you have the opportunity to speak that you do so, because it's going away. And it's going away not only in terms of, you know, political things happening, it's going away in terms of technology getting attacked. And I think it's an attack. I can't prove that, but I think it is. Because there's too many of us all at the same time. And, you know, it's shows like mine. Radio stations.
But mm-hmm. it's not, none of the small shows seem to be having any problems, or any of the small networks. It's the ones with a million or more listeners. To be blunt with y'all, that's what it seems to be. It's a really weird thing. At first, I thought there might have been some small ones, but I checked with some of the smaller networks and some of the upstart networks coming around right now, and they're not having these kind of problems. They got problems, but like, you know, most young networks do. But not the kind that we're talking about tonight. And I thought that was just a little bit, you know. In other words, if you got reach, someone seems to be interested.
Well, yeah, I would think they would be. And we've got reach. You've got reach. A lot of the shows that you carry have reach. And, yeah, but it's not just this show that gets hit. It's a bunch of shows, bigger shows. It's a bunch of radio stations, radio networks, and it's all been within the past 3 or 4 weeks that all this has been going on.
Yeah, it has been too. And you know, I was thinking they probably like to pick on you because you're doing 5 nights a week. I mean, we do 5 nights a week, but it's all different stuff, and some shows don't get hated on as much as other shows do.
Yeah.
But you see, I'm surprised my new show, News on the Flip Side, I'm surprised someone hasn't tried to hack that one yet because I've been steady hacking people off with that one. But hey, enough of that.
Well, you know, I don't try to hack anybody off. I don't try to tick somebody off. On the other hand, I don't care if, you know, if we present the truth, we present some facts, and that really gets under, it's a burr under somebody's underwear. Well, that, you know, they just have to get used to having a burr under their underwear. Because the facts are the facts. And I'm not trying to hack anybody off, not trying to get anybody all upset. But on the other hand, I don't care if that upsets them, if what we're saying is true. Now, if I misspeak, and it hurts somebody, then yeah, that bothers me. I don't want to do that. But if we just present the truth and they get ticked off, well, they just have to get used to being ticked off.
And that's how it mostly is. You know, I mean, you have on the cover. I love that show. It's one of the greatest shows I've ever done, and it's really well known in the field, and people love it, and I'm real happy with it. But I don't like to talk politics or get into any controversial issues other than, you know, UFO stuff on, because that's really what the show's about. And most of the people listen are not interested in hearing me talk about politics or abortion or any of that stuff. So, you know, I leave that for what it is. But frankly, I needed an outlet because this particular year was driving me crazy. So I needed an outlet to vent. So I.
So you started a new show, huh?
Well, yeah, I did. And I found a co-host. She actually co-hosts with Christopher George on Second Sight NYC. Really good show. Right now, between her and Tree Sheridan, between him two and Tree Sheridan on a Global Focus, they go back and forth on second place all the time. And they really, both shows are really, really good. So Stephanie and I got together, Stephanie Venetti and I, and she co-hosts with me because God knows I need a co-host. It's a really good show. It's very hard hitting. It's way outside of my comfort zone, I'll be honest with you. But it's educating me and hopefully a lot of other listeners. So it's been a lot of fun so far. It's been a little scary. We've taken on some topics, by the way, that have gotten picked up by AP, which amazed me. And you know, I've been real hard hitting on it. But it's not the show, and to be honest with y'all, if anybody comes over to listen to it, it's not going to always be like this. This is a political year, so we're doing a lot of politics. But as soon as the election's over, whoever wins, we'll be moving on to more current event stuff. And, of course, esoteric and things along those lines that interest both of me and me and Stephanie.
All right, we have to step away for break. Hopefully we won't get hacked during the break. Everything seems to be working okay right now, and we hope that it will continue to work okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Joe Montaldo this evening, and when we come back, we're going to get into some paranormal stuff. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. Joe, what'd you think about Vegas Gary there?
I was laughing my butt off. I was going to hope Kid can't hear me.
Yeah, well, that happens, actually, that happens to be a guy I went to high school with. He was my best buddy in high school, and he lives out in Las Vegas, and he called in and left that one day. But, yeah, he's a pro photographer, and he actually did some sports broadcasting in Dallas before he moved out to Vegas. All right, I want to talk about some paranormal stuff, and I want to talk about New Orleans, because everybody in the world has heard of Hurricane Katrina. Everybody in the world knows that it was a great disaster. It was a huge disaster for the city of New Orleans and surrounding areas. And, you know, we know that there were people who died as a result of that storm. And so I'm curious about the paranormal activity in New Orleans post-Katrina. Enough time has passed now so that things can settle down and people can notice if there is an increase in paranormal activity or not. Has there been an increase in paranormal activity in New Orleans since Katrina?
You know, that's a damn interesting question for a couple of reasons. One, right after the storm, I was most people know that we did the first live broadcast from the city of New Orleans on Wednesday as a radio station. After the thing, and I'm a contractor, so I came home and we were getting the city well. About 2 weeks afterwards, out here, I brought a crew up to the city to do a job. I was checking some properties for one of my owners. And one of my friends, Mike from Canuck, he's a Canuck, he's from Canada, and he was down. And I stood him on a corner in a place that on average they probably have several thousand people moving back and forth. And, of course, there was no one. For as far as the eye could see, you didn't hear anything, no birds, no dogs, nothing. All you could hear was a subtle breeze going through a city that was completely and utterly abandoned. Everything you could possibly think you could sense or feel, you were feeling. I mean, matter of fact, the whole crew got a little glitchy-witchy on me up there. And a lot of these guys are just contractors. They're not into any of this stuff. And it was even weirding them out. So I brought them back in. And so about a year ago, maybe not that long, but 9 months ago, I happened to be down in the same spot. And I just decided I would stand there and see. And it feels like New Orleans now. The only real difference is that it seems like for 6 or 7 months, everything that was paranormal in this city was allowed to just roam rampant because there was really no one here. It could just move over. So all the paranormal people told me for about 2 or 3 years after Katrina, there was like a burnout, almost no paranormal activity. And in the last year and a half, 2 years, they said it has increased back to its normal or even more than where it was normal. And I had never heard of a burnout in paranormal before. It kind of weirded me out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was like, really, huh? And they all of them were telling me the same thing. It's just because so much was allowed to roam across the city for so long, free and unabated, that a lot of it burnt itself out. Now it's recycling back. And I do see just recently, and there's a photograph. I don't know where it's at. It's on one of my Facebook pages. Y'all can go look at this. It's actually on my main Joe Montaldo page. Linda and I went, oh, and by the way, it's Linda and I's 30th anniversary. Say congrats, everyone.
Congrats.
Anyway, we were out in the quarter, and we were driving along, and I was taking a picture. We were actually driving through what they call the Marinese. It's an old part of the city. And we're driving through, and there's a lot of clubs and party and stuff going on. It's wee hours in the morning. I mean, it's 3, 4, 5 in the morning, something like that. And we're taking pictures shooting down the street, okay? And all of a sudden, in one of these pictures, and there was no one out where we were, by the way, there's somebody standing there. You can't see his feet. You really can't see his hands. It looks like the Grim Reaper. I'm not kidding y'all. You can go look for yourself and see this photo. So I was just kind of like, well, this is just kind of weird. A couple of weeks after that, we're driving through, taking pictures. You know, I learned a long time ago as an investigator, 30 years ago as an investigator, you always take pictures of empty areas because you never actually know what's there. And a camera tends to catch stuff. And we use a lot of times we'll use a digital camera and an analog camera. And sometimes we've got the camcorder with us, we'll use that as well. These images we've been getting down there look like people doing their merry everyday business, really not aware of the cameras, just moving along. Like they're walking along, except that one that looks like the Reaper. All the rest of them we've seen down here just look like people dressed in various clothes from looks different eras, just milling around doing this stuff.
It's and very where city, is this? Man.
Huh?
And what location is this?
This is, if you were in the French Quarter, this would be where we, it would be east of the quarter, directly east of the quarter, parallel to the river, actually north of the river. East of the quarter, about one block. It starts one block off the quarter where Esplanade is. On the other side of Esplanade Avenue is where we're talking about. And it's It's a very interesting place to go hang out. Now, I don't want people to get the wrong idea, because Pirates Harbor or any of the places in the quarter itself. Now, don't get confused. People are like, I'm going to the city of New Orleans. No. You want to go to the French Quarter, the Vieux Carré. The city of New Orleans is great, but it's not the Vieux Carré. The Vieux Carré is the Vieux Carré. It's the French Quarter. It's its own little area. And it's the oldest part of the city of New Orleans. It's survived three burn downs and all kind of countless invasions and gambling crazies and everything else. Slavery, the whole nine yards. You can find everything in this 16-block square area. It's very beautiful, but when you're out there at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, first off, and most importantly, don't ever go alone. Don't actually, if you're a tourist, don't ever go with less than four people, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. It's not because of the boogeymen. It's because of the other kind of boogeymen, the ones that might want to mug you or rob you because they know you're a tourist. Mm-hmm. So the city is dangerous. I'm not going to lie to y'all, but it's a very hairy, scary place in the wee hours. And I can guarantee you this. If you're willing to stay out, we'll usually go by Pato's or the Dungeon and get a hurricane or something along those lines, or mint julep or something like that, and then we'll sit around by the fire outside at the Pato's. It's got an outside courtyard with a fire in the middle of it. And we'll sit out there and enjoy the evening. About 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, we'll go walking through. Now, you know, for rookies, you're going to see all kinds of stuff. A lot of people tell me they see vampires darting around and stuff like that, and other kind of beings darting around. Really, when I'm walking down there, I'm really looking to see anything that looks like it actually might be a spirit. Because I'm still up in the air on spirits. Sometimes I think that dimensional bleed through. So I'm really looking for something that might be demonic or something that might be, you know, an actual spirit and not some kind of bleed through from another dimension. So and you always see something. I'm not even going to lie to you. I've never gone down there after 2 in the morning that I haven't seen something. And I can't tell you how many normal people I've had with me, or semi-normal people, that have been walking along and go, you know, just start freaking out because something seen them or something touched them. You know, there's a lot of that down there too. You'll be minding your own business, leaning across up against a light pole, you know, for a picture, and you'll feel like someone's hand run down your back and across your butt and stuff, and you're kind of like, of course, there's nobody there, but you can see it.
The French Quarter is the original town of what has become New Orleans.
It
was founded by pirates, priests, and prostitutes. It was a rough place.
Yeah.
It really was.
And it stayed like that for a very, very long time. And even in its heart today, it's one of the few places that still has the original New Orleans taste. Because one thing Katrina did do, which was a bad thing, is it killed a lot of New Orleans. A lot of what New Orleans is the people, the locals. And we lost more than half our local population. They did not come back. And in all fairness, I love my friends up north, but a lot of y'all came down here, and frankly, acting New Orleans is not being New Orleans, okay? That's all I can tell y'all. You look like goofballs when you do that, so you should quit it.
Well, but look, the New Orleans, as long as there is even a kernel of the original there, will always be New Orleans, and it'll always sprout back.
And it will. It is. It really is coming back. It just takes time. I mean, with so many people lost and so many people gone, and with a lot of new influences on the city, you know. But the city has always been that. It's always been a melting pot, so it'll change and conform itself to what it needs to be. But
the paranormal stuff is back.
It's on the increase now.
On the increase, and you have seen. You said in these pictures, you see people going about their business dressed in clothes from various eras, but you don't see those with your eyes?
No, I do. That's what I'm talking about. The pictures are different. We get pictures too, but sometimes you'll be just standing there, and what's really weird, that's why I don't think they're ghosts, because and not these. Now, I don't want to get people on me about ghosts, because it's not that I don't believe. It's just a lot of stuff to me seems to be dimensional bleed through, and what I mean by that is you'll see a scene where there's a group of people moving around, like just doing their everyday jobs, walking down the street, picking up something to eat, rolling a cart, whatever, you riding a horse, whatever it may be. They're doing just their everyday jobs. And it's not like you're focused on one person. You're getting a whole scene there. It's like for just one moment, the dimension forward or backward, you're just getting to see it. And then all of a sudden it closes and it's gone and it's nothing. I don't think any of those people are dead, by the way. I think they're actually alive wherever they are at that moment. It's just you're either seeing backwards or forwards. For me, a ghost is a much different thing.
Oh, okay. So what's a ghost?
Well, you know, for me, a ghost is really somebody who's actually died and somehow got caught in between. They don't seem to act the same way. It seems to be different, especially down here. When you hear about a haunting down here, it's usually not anything nice or polite. There are usually all kind of stuff that goes along with it. And then the person that is involved usually seems to really just come apart or come unglued. So for us, it seems to be almost a demonic type thing. Everything else down here seems to be just like you're getting glimpses of the city at different times of its history. It's almost like New Orleans is sitting on some little mini portal or something, because from time to time, you just, I'm not kidding, and people, even tourists tell me this, they'll be driving through the city, and for a minute they feel like they're back, like, you know, 1760 New Orleans. And what's funny about it, sometimes you'll even hear the guy say, well, damn, the roads are all bumpy. Of course, our roads are really bad down here, so, but it's just...
You know, I used to live in Louisiana, right?
Yeah, and you probably lived in a state, and you lived in the other part of the state where they had good roads.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. Listen, I used to do a talk show that was just a general topic talk show, and I had a state senator in one time, and I started talking about all the money for the roads and why are the roads so bad. And he started giving me all this stuff about, well, you know, we've got all this water and the soil. And I said, now, hang on a minute. I can close my eyes and tell you when I cross the state line in any direction. You mean to tell me that right there at the state line in any direction, the soil changes?
It is weird.
And he kind of blushed. He said, well, that doesn't really make sense, does it? I said, no, it doesn't. What does make sense is somebody's stealing the road money and we're not getting our roads fixed. And, of course, you know what happened with the theft of the highway money. It was happening, and the guy went to jail. But
it's still happening.
Yeah, there's not a road in Louisiana that is safe to drive, really safe to drive, more than 55 miles an hour on.
And that's a true statement, too, because, frankly, if you're going to speed down here, you better keep it on interstate. And even the interstates are bouncy. Matter of fact, there's two turns coming through the city of New Orleans that somehow or another they banked the wrong way.
Yes, they did. They sure did. We have to step away for break. I'll let you tell that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Joe Montaldo this evening. And he lives, as you have been hearing, in New Orleans. And... he owns a radio station. He also owns one of the networks that carries this show. And we're talking about some paranormal stuff here. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Joe Montaldo. Just as we went away for break, you were about to tell folks about a couple of curbs coming through New Orleans that they banked the wrong way.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You when you're coming through, it's the 610 split that goes on the north side of the city, coming into Metairie where I live, and they actually bank the wrong way. When you hit the turn, especially if you're doing 60 or 70 miles an hour, the car wants to lift up and pull across. Well, you know, when you bank, your car's supposed to hug and lay into the turn. Oh, no. These do just – I have seen way back in the day when I used to drive for a living, I was working for a company called Orleans Icy, and I had a bunch of icy syrup and CO2 containers in my truck. When I made that turn, it threw all of them from one side to the other side, literally sending CO2, which, by the way, in case y'all didn't know, when CO2 fills up an area, you can't breathe.
Right.
So it was very, very strange and very hairy. But, yeah, I've seen people wipe out there many, many times. And then there's one just at the foot of the one of the big bridges down here. See, we're all flat and below sea level, but we have these huge bridges that are 100, you know, either easy 50, 60 stories high, 70 stories high. They're just huge bridges. I mean, oil rigs and big ships have to fit under them, so they're very tall. And a lot of them are very steep. And when you come to the bottom of them, there'll be some hairy turns. I just don't know who designed this section of interstate. I was thinking he must have been smoking a crack pipe and flipped the image over, you know, on
blue. Well, there's a lot of weird stuff like that in Louisiana. But
yeah, you just got to wonder, I mean, who's brilliant. And now they've actually tried to fix it and put blacktop on it and level it out and make it kind of sticky. They roughed up the blacktop so that right there the car kind of grabs. But the problem is, it's people are coming through there kind of fast, and all of a sudden their car's driving better because it's sticking to this. And, of course, when it gets off of that, it wants to go fling it out.
Yeah, yeah. Now, after the Katrina thing, you were on the air with me, and you told us about an incident, actually I think a couple of incidents, where there were some military people that reported to you about having seen some upright reptilians walking along there in the water there in the post Katrina.
You know, that was weird. And by the way, since then we've actually talked to a couple of these guys and actually had a couple more witnesses come forward. But it was a very strange thing. First off, I didn't even know how they knew I was in the city of New Orleans. And you have to remember, there's not much in the way of phone service at the time. Cell phone service still did not exist. Fortunately for me, I had Bell South or AT&T, and I had a hard line. And I got just enough water in my house that it was below the electrical outlets and the hard line, so we cleaned it out, and we had phone and dial-up internet. But anyway, somehow or another, a couple of guys got a hold to me. First, we had an NOPD call in, and I thought it was a joke, saying he had seen a reptilian walking in waist-deep water to a reptilian, which is probably around 4 foot is where waist-deep for them is, which is about where it was at the time, walking down Esplanade Avenue on the east side of the French Quarter. And I was like, yeah, sure. And he said, oh, no, some other people. And then I got a couple other calls. And I still thought these guys were Westerville. And then all of a sudden, I get a call from a National Guard guy. Now, I'm not sure. He was an enlisted man. He was E5 or E6. Really taking a chance here that I might go in the air and say something and get his butt in a lot of trouble. Starts telling me about his experience. The next thing you know, we ended up with 8 witnesses to these events on 2 different days, 8 witnesses, all of them cops or National Guard. And by the way, the National Guard guys we were talking about, these were guys who had been stationed in Iraq, actually fought in the war, and were down here now. These weren't even just little rookie soldiers. These were actually real hardcore soldiers. Because one of the questions I asked one of the guys was, I said, well, you're toting an M16. Did you ever even sling it, you know, take it off your shoulder and sling it forward? He said, you know, Joe, he said, I seen them, and when he was talking, he had seen 3 of them, and there was a boat. 2 of the guys were walking, 2 of the guys were in a boat, or one of them was in a boat. And anyway, one of the guys had a M16 actually in his hands, you know, one hand on the stock, one hand on the handle, and just holding it, and the others had them slung. He said, as he walked up, all he could remember is walking up to them, seeing them, and the next thing he knew, they were going one way, and they were going one way. The reptilians were moving off in the distance on their own, and they had turned around and walked. He said even for him, it was a mite odd that nobody freaked out and shot any reptilians. And when you talk to the cops, they basically said the same thing. The one cop said, because he had taken his car, because the guy who was in the boat, the NOPD was in the boat, had called a cop in the quarter who had taken his car as far up as he could get till he hit the water. And then he jumped out and was running as fast as you can through waist-deep water for them, which was probably chest-deep water. And he had his gun out in his hand, and he said the same thing. He said he watched his friend's boat as it approached, and the other guy that was in the water as he approached the reptilians. And he was still back probably 100, 200 yards. And he said the next thing he remembers is he's still walking forward with his gun in his hand, but now the boat and the other guy are moving back to him. Now, there was a couple of things. There was actually quite a lot more that went on in there, but, you know, with the different accounts. But still, they all basically came down the same thing. I think, let's see, they had 2, 4, 6, 8. I think they reported 5. There was 2 days, and I think there was 5 different takes on the 2 days, and maybe 6 different takes. I'd have to go back and check. But still, they were basically all the same things. They encountered these reptilians walking down. There was either only one time there was one. Every other time there was 3 reptilians.
How did they describe these reptilians?
Well, the National Guard guys were telling me that they were roughly, to put this in perspective, the guy who called me was 6'4". He said this thing was at least a foot to a foot and a half taller than him. So that puts it in the 7 to 8 foot height range. He said he's at 260. The thing was probably, he estimated a foot thicker than him and probably a foot to 2 foot wider. He got a very good description of this thing, which that puts it in the 300 to 500 pound range, which is where most contactees say reptilians are, 7 to 8 foot, 400 to 600 pounds. So, I mean, he's given a description that I have personally heard from many contactees on many occasions.
So, I mean, were these reptilians, were they basically humanoid, or did they look like alligators standing up, or what?
Well, no, what they tell you is in his description, he said that, you know, he could see when its hands were up out of the water. He said basically he's seen an opposable thumb and four fingers and a thumb is what he's seen. He said he couldn't tell you with the feet, but from the waist up, they looked scaly, but you could tell it wasn't scales. It was like bumps of some kind, and they were multicolored. Green, yellow, blue, purple, dependent. He said the really, really big male, the one that was walking in the front, had a crest that went down his spine. He said you could even see it because it left like a little wake trail behind it when they were walking away. He said apparently it went down below the waterline. He said you could tell the other ones were younger. They didn't have the crest, and they didn't appear to have tails. The big male appeared to have a tail. That's also standard with what contactees say. So, you know, hearing that, I was kind of like, this guy actually seen something. And when they describe him, because basically the reptilians are built like us, just on a much more massive scale. But unfortunately, because of their colors and those ridge caps and the way their foreheads kind of rounded out, they look more reptilian. Now, what I find interesting about that, everybody who's ever touched one told me they're warm to the touch, which means they're not reptiles. If they're warm-blooded, they're not reptiles. And then we know on at least 50 or 80 occasions, contactees being underwater talking about that at least some of the reptilians have gills across the tops of their shoulders that underlie in the skin flaps until they get in the water, which makes them amphibians. So there seem to be warm-blooded amphibians. So reptiles, not even really an accurate description. But a lot of them will tell you it's kind of like what are those lizards that stand up and run in Australia? I can't think of their names right now. They say they kind of look like them in the face, except they have crests on their heads and stuff like that. And I have noticed some weird stuff because colors seem to make a difference in the reptilian world. They seem to the bigger and more responsible or the more in charge one seems to be, the more brilliant and vivid the colors are. And by the way, that's abduction criteria. I just let slip out. But they talk about that quite a bit. You know, the big dominant males tend to have like a deep brilliant purple or deep brilliant blue. They say the big females are the same way, and then they talk about the other ones having brown or green or yellow or even red. And that color seems to play something, at least in where their status is. I don't know if they can physically change the color, or if it comes like that, or how that works, but it does seem to be that way. But getting back to what we were talking about, that's one of the things the cop was describing. He also described their eyes, which I'm not going to describe because we do consider it abduction criteria, but he gave me an identical to the color and the shape of the pupil, what I have heard many, many, many other contactees tell me. So, for me, there was no doubt this guy saw this thing.
All right. Joe, we have to step away for break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up right there. We're also going to open up the telephone lines for you this evening, folks. And for those of you who are listening for the very first time, it's a talk show. That means we open the telephone lines, and you get to call in and talk to our guest. If you have a question or if you have a comment, you'll get to talk directly with him. And we invite you to do that. We'll do that on the other side of this break. We'll be back. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. May you never suffer that tragedy again. Joe, as we went away for break, you and I were talking about this really wild report. And by saying that, I'm certainly not implying that I think it's not a real, genuine incident. It's just here you've got people who are trained observers, and they are describing something way out of our norm after the Katrina hurricane, and that is reptilians that were seen walking through the water in New Orleans. And as you described, they are amphibians as opposed to reptilian. Do you think that they are extraterrestrial, or do you think they are terrestrial?
You know, in reality, I think they're both. I really do think the reptilians are from here. Whether they left and came back, anybody can argue about that. But after seeing the Pravda map, the map of the creator that's in the Russian Museum, and finding out that it dates back 120 million years, it's an aerial resource map, which means whoever made this aerial resource map, I mean, it's a map of a valley taken from an aerial view 120 million years ago. Now, as far as I know, there was no men ever on a planet more than 2 million years ago. So,
well, and let's say this, it's an aerial view taken from an altitude of right at the edge of space.
Yeah, so you've just got to wonder. I mean, it says that there was somebody here before. Even modern-day science does not argue this map's on authenticity. They agree that it's real. So how can it be real if no one was on the planet? Of course, if you listen to any scientists, we're it. We were the only intelligent life on Earth. Of course, we know better. But still, as far as they're concerned, we are. So the map is a contradiction. But it does exist. Anybody can check it out. It's been... As best I can tell you, it's been checked out by at least two dozen archaeologists, quite a few other experts, and that they agree this map is real. So how can it be real? Who was flying around in the skies on Earth 120 million years ago? I mean, that's advanced technology, and 120 million years ago, it's you can't get past that. So,
well, here's another thing. Its construction is various layers, including a layer of ceramic that is not ceramic like we make. It's nanotechnology.
It's just there's so much to this map, and so little people know it. It's actually one of the best kept secrets in the fields. Mm-hmm. For some reason, people don't like to talk about it because really, it does say that there was some form of intelligence on Earth prior to man, which could mean a lot of things. Could be a lot of ramifications. Are we squatters? I mean, if the Sumerians are right and we were a created race, then we're squatting on somebody's planet. I mean, and the reptilians seem to be quite a bit more advanced than we are. Thank God they haven't seen fit to blow us off the planet yet. So, I mean, there comes a lot of issues here. If they are back and they are willing to share, how's that going to work? If they're back and they want their planet back, how's that going to work?
Well, according to these witnesses in New Orleans, which include New Orleans police officers and National Guard soldiers, if we are to take their testimony seriously, which I certainly do, they're back, or maybe never left, but they're here. All right, but let me ask you this. Before Katrina, were there reports from people seeing these reptilians in the New Orleans area?
No, not in the city itself, no. Outlying areas, you know, Honey on Swamp, I'd heard of them a few times, at Slidell, North Shore, more rural areas, more swampy areas. They must like the swamp. Never really heard about them in the city itself. I think they took an opportunity because New Orleans was flooded, and it was flooded for about 21 days. I think they took an opportunity and took a stroll in one of the oldest cities in the United States. He said, why not? Who's there? And so they ran into a few police officers, a few military people. It wasn't a big deal to them. And they got to go milling around in the city. for whatever reasons that they wanted to. I mean, I'm sure they had their reasons why, but maybe it's been a long time since they've been able to openly walk amongst us like that. I mean, in the old days, in the Sumerian text and the Egyptian text and even some of the old Indian texts, they seem in the Mayan and the South American text, or most of it, they seem to have walked openly amongst us before in our societies. But for some reason, and this is not just true for the reptilians, but all three species, for some reason at the time of Christ, when we adopted religion, they no longer felt safe walking amongst us, for whatever reasons that is. And I don't want to blame it on religion, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. It just seemed to have happened around that time period. It may not have anything to do. It might just be a coincidence. You know, I'm funny about coincidences, but it may have just been a coincidence that it happened around that time. You know, it's interesting, though, Kevin. I actually regressed, or I should say actually Linda regressed one of the NOPDs from this. And under his regression, we found out that he was at the UNO arena that was set up to look like a mall on the West Bank. And while he was in there, we actually found some other witnesses that had actually been here, some other cops and some other people. They were running the training scenario, which seemed to be part reptilians, or there was reptilians there and humans there as well, and it was almost like some sort of crowd control.
Okay, now really wait a minute. You regressed him, and in the regression, he's telling you about being in a training exercise.
Well, he was telling us about being at the Oakwood Mall with the reptilians moving people around and other stuff. We found that it was a training exercise because when I asked him to look up and tell me what it seemed because of the way the mall's roof shaped, I expected him to say that. And then he said, oh, no, it looked kind of dark, and then it kind of looked like it had a dome to it. So when we started regressing other people on this area, we found out that it was actually the UNO arena. Enough people could remember enough bits and pieces that we found out that it was actually the UNO arena. He was not actually in the mall. And he didn't even figure it out until like his third regression that it was actually a training scenario. He just kind of woke up in the middle of regression going, oh, it is. It's a training scenario. Because we won't tell anybody that. You know, you got to figure that stuff out on your own, or it's a waste of everybody's time. And it was just strange the way all this unfolded. And he turned us on to some other offices that had different kind of experiences that wanted to be regressed. And when you put them all under, we were finding out they were going to this what looked like the Oakwood Mall. It had the same kind of lights in it, these black poles, and there was people all over. And they were running different scenarios where the reptilians would come in and grab a bunch of people, and the humans would help put them in one area, almost like they were herding cattle almost. And then there was times where there was other types of humans coming in, and they were fighting against them so the other humans and the reptilians could get away. It was just a strange grouping of scenarios.
And there's more than one of these witnesses that gave you similar information during regression?
About 30 altogether. So it's quite a bit bigger than we thought it was in the beginning, you know, and there seemed to have been more going on. Now, it's not the first time I've heard the reptilians do training scenarios. It's the first time I heard it in the city of New Orleans, but it's not the first time I've heard them do training scenarios. They do training scenarios for a lot of different things. But in this case, it was done here. I think they really were just taking advantage of an area where they had a lot of people that they wanted it. You know, a lot of the military people were here. A lot of the police departments were here. Anybody who might have been contactees in those groups were accessible. And I'm sure with a little nudge here and there in someone's sleep, they could have brought more people, had them assigned down here. So I think they took advantage of it.
So what you're saying is, if I understand this, it's a training scenario being done by the reptilians.
By the reptilians.
Not a joint training exercise with the reptilians and our military.
Nope. Even though there were humans there, they were not military, and best I can tell, none of the aliens, except for the Greys, even want to deal with our military. And the Greys only do it because they're the peacekeepers. They're keeping the peace between the humans, the reptilians, and the human aliens. And so they just kind of, you know, get involved for whatever reasons, but even they don't really want to get involved with our military. I mean, it is our military, after all, and it is a little flaky. So I don't think anyone would be involved anymore than they have to. But what you've seen here was what looked to be reptilians training military soldiers and police officers to work for them. That's the best way I can describe it.
But let's work backwards here. These guys, these people that you regressed, about 30 of them, are telling you this amazing story about this training exercise being conducted by these reptilians, and that it was at the University of New Orleans Arena. All right, so working backwards from that, that means that these reptilians had some working arrangement with UNO in order to have access to the arena and to have been able to redecorate it to make it look like a mall.
You're going to love this part. Right across the street from the UNO is one of our armories. They actually have an armory there. Two blocks down from UNO is Homeland Security and the FBI office.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have pretty much everybody you need to do any scenario you want with any accessories they want. But in all fairness, there really wasn't much. There wasn't anybody here when this was going on. There was 3 or 4 weeks. Most people don't realize the city of New Orleans really didn't get any people in it for well into 6 months before. There was only really contractors here and military. There wasn't any place for anybody to stay. There just wasn't any homes or anything. If you didn't have somebody you knew you could stay with, you couldn't get here. So really, it was still abandoned. So I'm not sure if they even needed the military's cooperation on this. They may have, you know, the general they used may have been a contactee. They may have just went in and programmed him and said, hey, this is how it's going to be, and we're going to use these areas, and you're going to move your troops out of here, and you're going to bring these people down because we want to use them. It really seems that's the way it went down. And then it only lasted probably, I want to say, 90 days, maybe 120 days, and then after that it seemed to stop, at least here. It really looks like there was something about the area. They wanted to use the area for a particular reason. The lake borders, the lake is only, I don't know, half a block from where UNO is, so you're right there at the lake. You've got the military armory right there. You've got the FBI and Homeland Security and a couple other Secret Service training facilities right there. Then you've got a military base not too far from there, which all were abandoned, by the way. There was nobody in any of them. Because of the storm, there was nobody in there at all. What amazed me is they could come in after all that storm damage, get in there, and basically remodel a place in what seemed to be no time at all. It was a very strange scenario. So I'm not sure how they pulled it off. I would have figured they'd have had to have done something because there was a lot of patrols going around. So if you'd have seen any activity there, you would have stopped. But of course, the activity was happening in the wee hours of the morning from what the contactees were saying. So I'm not even sure if they would have noticed it. It was a strange thing.
Well, it's also possible that they were using sort of the Jedi mind tricks on these guys.
That's true, too.
Because we have an example of that with both the police officer and National Guard, who at one moment they're walking toward these reptilians. At least one of them had his gun drawn. And the next thing you know, the reptilians are going one way and these guys are going the other way and don't remember what happened. So if the reptilians were able to do that, they certainly, I think, would be able to handle deflecting attention away from whatever they're doing in a training exercise.
You know,
let me give the telephone number real quick. The telephone number, folks, is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you're outside of the USA or Canada, you can use the flash message feature or call us. Okay? Joe, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, too, in Matt's case, he was one of the NOPDs. He remembers one of the reptilians, like, taking a chunk out of his shoulder, just reaching down and biting him on his shoulder. And what's funny is, even on the regression, that shoulder hurt him. There was no physical marks that I could see, even though there was some discoloration. He said, and after that, he started having he's got a weird skin disease that messes with him a lot. He said it happened after that. Now, what's interesting about that is I was talking to a National Guard, and he said the reptilian was, you know, telling, come on, move, move, do this, do this, do this. And the guy got flipped with him, and the reptilian took a chunk out of his shoulder. And he had a big, huge purple bruise on his shoulder. So maybe it was because of different time scenarios and how soon one was regressed versus the other. But, I mean, that was very strange in itself. And there did seem to be an outline or something there.
Hmm.
And he took pictures of it and all. And what's interesting is...
have you seen the pictures?
Yeah, I've seen him, yeah. Uh-huh. And he retires 2015, so he said he'll release those when he's retired because he gets his full retirement and there's nothing the military can do about it. Two of the NOPDs will be retiring this year, so they will be coming forward. Along with a little special surprise, a couple of years back, two Mississippi State troopers were sitting on a beach in Long Beach, Mississippi, doing reports, talking and doing reports. You know, they parked their cars, one facing one the other way. And they both happened to have their cams running on their car. And you hear the one cop go, "What the bleep is that?" And the other guy's like, "I don't know, what is that?" And they started to look over, and they actually witnessed what they say, and what I've seen in the video, appears to be a UFO coming out of the water, raising up over the sky, and then just gently floating along, crossing over the highway. By the way, it's all on videotape, crossing over the other side of the highway, and pfft, it's gone. I mean, just like that. Poof, it's gone. Couldn't tell you if it shot off or if it just disappeared or what happened, but it was gone. Both these guys are going to be retiring real soon. One of them actually is already retired, and the other one will be retiring real soon. And as soon as they're retired, we'll break that story and put the videotape out for everybody to see, because, frankly, I don't blame them. As Mississippi State troopers, I would not want this to get out until after I was retired, because they'd end up in a psych ward somewhere down there.
That very well could happen there.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What were these reptilians or whatever they were? What were they training for?
You know, that's a good question, and there seem to be a couple of answers here. One, it did seem to be like some kind of basic crowd control. They said they gave him these little stun things. They're like sticks that you know, like what you use with cattle, those shocking sticks. It was basically the same thing, and they said they were just wanting them to group up. He said there was also some type of sorting going on where it wasn't sorted by sex or color, but it must have been sorted by some type of lie group, because they had this group here, that group here, this group here, this group there. And it seemed to be all kind of ages in there. There also seemed to be some type of what seemed to be some type of medical training. Also, and in a lot of these cases, there seems to be empathic and telepathic training of different types, not just in communications, but in abilities. In other words, can I stop someone by thought? One of the things we've actually helped with our gray contactees is we learned a long time ago that all these aliens like to travel in threes, and we've learned that sometimes three contactees, three very strong empathic or telepathic contactees together can definitely stop a reptilian or a human, and even sometimes stop a gray. I have to warn anybody who tries this, if you find the right contactees to do it, it's very dangerous, and they get very mad. And what will happen is you'll stop the one, and then the other two will just basically slap you around like you've never been slapped around before. So it's a very dangerous thing, but it does work. And in these type of scenarios, we're finding that they're training a lot of this stuff. And then it seems like, especially in these reptilian things, a lot of the guys I talked to, and even a lot of the women I talked to, said they felt like they were being trained to fight a different type of alien. Two of the guys call them insectoids. I have no idea. I have not got enough cases on that to really come to any real conclusions on it, but it's a very interesting scenario. Now, this was the scenario in New Orleans. Now, I hear about scenarios that are underwater in different places around the planet and actually on other planets where they're training you along a whole different line, more along an Aquarian society line, where they don't want you fighting. They want you really using your abilities to either create or understand or learn, to learn how to function with different types of technologies, to teach you new technologies. We hear a lot about that, but that wasn't what was going on in New Orleans. New Orleans seemed to be like a preparation for a much larger disaster than what went on here. And this was a big disaster, but in the grand scheme of 7 billion people, this wasn't squat. So it seemed like they were being trained like that, and it also seemed like they were being trained to find the particular group and protect the particular group. They were being taught how to identify them, how to find them, and how to get them to safe spots, which I find all of that to be very interesting. I have no idea what it means for us in the future. I mean, I'm sure it could have a lot of implications, but in these cases, that's what they seem to be teaching them. And when the contactees would ask, or even when these guys would ask, "What is this about?" they said, "Need to know," basically. You don't need to know. And on a couple of occasions, I got the sense that they were training these guys, so these guys would be training someone else. So I'm not even sure if the training's even going to affect the individuals they were training. if that makes any sense at all.
Okay. Well, if the reptilians have been here a while or have come back, whatever may be the case, what would be a reason they would be waiting? Let's say they were going to be harmful to us. What could be some reasons they would be waiting until now or in the immediate future? You know, what are they waiting for instead of already doing what they, you know, harming us that they're going to?
That's an excellent question, and I'm sure we got enough time on Kevin to answer, but I'll make it as fast, as brief as I can. If they wanted to wipe us out, they could. You know, I tell everybody, if you're going to judge the aliens, judge them by their actions. Well, they haven't enlightened our species, and they haven't wiped our species out, which suggests whatever agenda they're running is about them, not about us. We're just part of it. We're not even the primary part. We're just part of their agenda. So in the end, if they wanted us dead, we'd be dead. And if they wanted us enlightened, we'd be enlightened. But they haven't sought to do either one. And remember, we know from the Sumerians that the reptilians and the human aliens have been here since the start of what we consider civilized man. They're in all of the ancient writings. There's no ancient writings you're not going to find the human aliens and the reptilians. They're just everywhere. What's interesting about this is the humans, according to the Sumerians, the humans came here from somewhere else, created two great white domes because they couldn't breathe the air here, and in turn, whoever lived in those domes created another race, just like themselves, that could, you know, rule the planet. Well, that race decided to create what the Sumerians call the seven creations of man, with our ancestors being the seventh one, not us. The seventh creation man was just like us, except for the fact that they weren't really sentient in the way we understand it. I mean, they could make beer, they could procreate, they'd go around and plow the fields and stuff like that, but they never actually asked why they had to do it or what their existence was.
And beer and procreation, what else is there, right?
I know. Well, then here comes, and you know, that was probably Eden. That's probably what the Bible's talking about when it's talking about Eden. Well, in comes the reptilians, which, of course, the Bible talks about the serpent that got us kicked out of Eden. The reptilians come in, start sleeping with the Sumerian women, stealing them, raping them, and those women started having children. The Sumerians said these children were much different. They didn't look any different, but they acted much different. They were the ones that eventually overthrew the human-type aliens and went on for themselves. Now, we know it's fact today that we all have a reptilian section in our brain. It's science fact. It's the part that really drives us. It's the part that makes us who and what we are. And that's what they say the reptilians gave us so long ago. So if that's true, then they're not really wanting to wipe us out. They kind of feel maybe kindred to us, but in the end, they may want their planet back, so there's going to be a problem there. And there's 7 billion of us, and what happens if there's 7 billion or more of them? That's going to create a really big problem. So somewhere along the line, there's going to have to be some self-correction. But I really think the reason neither one of the races have done anything harmful to anybody is because the Greys showed up and said, if you do, we're going to show you who the real boss is.
Rusty, does this answer your question?
Yeah, that does it.
Probably overload.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
We have a flash message here, two questions in it. This is from Kevin in Australia. Hi, Kevin and Joe, and this question is for you, Joe. Can you possibly retell your UFO encounter with a large triangle and its effect on your vehicle? And he says he has had a similar encounter, and he wonders if you noticed some type of time loop which affected your view of the surrounding area, like it was like you were trapped in a bubble of a sort, and the area around looked disturbed. But tell you what we got to do. What we got to do is step away for a break, and we'll get the answer to that when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
But nothing's hotter than the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone lines are open, ladies and gentlemen. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. My guest is Joe Montaldo, and Joe, our listener that sent the flash message from Australia, wants to know, can you recount this encounter with the UFO and its effect on your vehicle, and did you see any distortion around you? And kind of keep it concise, because we do have a caller on hold.
To kind of button this down real quick, I know which case you're talking about. It's the night we seen the six, the one we seen that went down in the water. We had been tracking this thing for a bunch of hours. Linda and I were running all over creation trying to keep up with this thing. And we finally seen it go down in Pirates Harbor, Wrigley's Pass. And while we were there, I pulled off the road. And what's weird, and I really didn't think about time distortion until he asked this question, by the way, which it was a bit odd, because it seemed to be when we were standing at the boat launch watching these other six that were coming around circling, it did kind of seem like we were temporarily, I don't want to say time and space, maybe slightly out of dimension. Maybe it's the type of engines they use. I'm not sure what it was. But it did seem to feel a little distorted and a little off. And I remember that because I couldn't get my, at the time I was working for MUFON, this is how long ago this was, and I couldn't get my MUFON director on the phone because my cell phone wasn't getting the signal. And then all of a sudden, when they broke out, three went one way, three went the other way, the signal opened back up, and I managed to get my director on there, and we started talking, and we were watching. One would come up, and it would circle, and one would come up, and it would circle. Now, the car wasn't running at the time because we were parked. And about that time, my MUFON director says, "You know, Joe, do you really feel safe there?" And I hadn't thought about that either, by the way. You know, I was all hyped up in the moment. And I said, you know what, I really don't. So I got in the car. At the time, it was a station wagon, because we used to have Rose Company. And we got in a station wagon, Linda and I, and we started driving off. And we're cruising down the road, probably, I'd say it's doing about 100, maybe 95, 100. And this white station wagon, I think we were in a black car, I think. But anyway, this white station wagon came up behind us. We were watching him come up. At first, I didn't know what he was. I just knew it was a car, and he came up behind us. And as he was coming up, there was a black triangle coming off from the east, from the left side of the car. As it approached the car, my car died. As it was going over, my car died. It just, whoa, like everything went off. Lights, radio, everything. It was like someone just unplugged everything, and the car just was going, whoa. I even clicked it into neutral so it wouldn't slow me down as fast. And we were just kind of coasting along, and all of a sudden, this station wagon passes up. It's got tinted windows, and as it's going by, it's got a U.S. government plate on it. And as soon as he cleared and the triangle got over on the other side of the highway, everything came back on, and we were running fast. Now, what I found out about this is I'm a pretty good driver, and I've been driving curvy, crazy roads for a long time. So I was mad, so I punched it. And now I figure, at best, we had equal, so I had a big V8, so I figured we were equal in speed, and I probably knew the roads way better, and I never could actually catch up with the car. We hit the old Wrigley's Pass Bridge, which doesn't exist anymore because Katrina took it out. It's an old, rackety, old metal, rickety, rackety bridge. Mm-hmm. No one goes over it flying because it's just dangerous. I hit it about 85, and before I even knew I was on the other side of the bridge, he was nowhere to be seen, anywhere, gone, poof. Have no idea. There's only one way in and one way out of that particular swamp. He didn't pass us up, so he couldn't have went back that way, and I don't know where he went. I mean, because once you hit the bridge, it's a straight run for about 8 or 9 miles, and I couldn't see a car anywhere.
All right, let's go to the telephones and caller.
Yeah.
Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Montana.
Hey.
My that's a very interesting story, but my question concerns that training exercise that you were talking about.
Sure.
You said that that people were receiving some kind of medical instruction. Could you explain anything further on that?
Well, what it seemed like, and now I wasn't there, you remember, this is all under regression or people recanting memories. What it seemed like is they were giving several devices. Most of them worked by, I guess, telepathy. Where they would think about what they wanted the device to do, and then they would put the device near a wound, and it would repair. Now, what I found out about this is everyone I talked to said the wounds they were repairing were real wounds. So there seemed to be several things they were doing, from healing them to getting them to close up to taking out infections to a couple of things. But all the people using these devices told me the same thing, that the wounds were real.
Okay, now, so let me ask you a question. Is it possible that instead of this being a training exercise solely, that the reptilians were running a rescue mission for New Orleans?
They might have been. See, that's the thing. There's because of the way this was handled, there's just not that much information we're going to get out that we're going to consider to be very solid. So it could be. You can't rule out anything at this time. You can't even rule out, really, that there was some other involvement from another party in it. It's just, you know, the things that went on seemed to be very real to everybody that was there. And there did seem to be real damage to real humans that were being taken care of. And on two occasions, they even showed reptilians that had been injured, which is kind of nice that you know they can actually be hurt, but still, they even on two occasions talked about them, and they seemed to have no problem healing either or, which I find interesting in itself. So, you know, I don't know. It may have been part training. It may have been a training based on a real scenario. We do that ourselves. The U.S. military does it itself. Sometimes we'll do live training. So I can't rule that out either. But all I can tell you is it was very interesting. It was very fascinating. All the contactees that I talked to about this, not just the 30 and the ones, but other contactees that had similar experience, really feel that there's a real need for this. They get a sense that there's a real need for this. I just don't know why.
You know, Mr. Montano, it's interesting that you said these reptilians can be hurt. How could a human being defend himself against one of these reptilians?
Actually, a human being will not be able to defend itself against a reptilian in any physical form. The only bet you would have is if your telepathic or telekinesis abilities were stronger than the reptilians happen to be. Other than that, I don't think you have a prayer. I mean, on average, the big males outweigh us by 300-400 pounds. Even the adolescent males are going to outweigh a big-sized human by 100 or more pounds. So they're physically stronger than us. They're physically faster than us. They're smarter than we are. And they are telepathic. And from my understanding, not just telepathic, but possess telekinesis, which is the ability to, affect matter by thought. So, I mean, in their case, if they really wanted to kill you, they could probably just think, close the artery, and kill you. So the only real recourse a human would have here is if he could do the same. And that does seem like part of the training. Even though, I got to say, when I'm talking to contactees, they don't want to hurt the reptilians. Actually, really, when I hear people, they with the human aliens, they either want to hurt them or love them, but... with the reptilians, it doesn't seem to be that way. They really don't want to hurt them. Most of the contactees say the reptilians seem to be much more like us. They seem to have a sense of humor. They seem to have a temper. They seem to at least have some kind of fundamentally one-based religion. So in a lot of ways, they're like just they're probably humans where humans would be in say 100 million years. That's probably where they are in the evolutionary chain. So for us, there's not much of a competition there. There's not much we're going to be able to do. I mean, frankly, their technology is so far beyond us, I don't even know if there's a way to affect them. But by saying that, the human aliens seem to be about the same level as technology as the reptilians, but the Greys seem to be an order of magnitude, I don't know, 1,000 times. They use organic ships. They grow their own ships and stuff. I mean, they seem to be using a technology that's all telepathic-based and telekinesis-based, so... I have to tell, and I've seen this myself along with other contactees, even a little 3-foot gray, if it's walking down a corridor and there's a human alien or reptilian alien present, they will actually physically move out of the way of the gray. They will put themselves against the wall just like a regular everyday human would be. And what bothers me about that is when I first got into this field, everybody used to tell me the grays worked for the reptilians and the humans. Come to find out, that was a big misnomer. They seem to fear them. They don't seem to work for them. They stay out of their ways all the time. Even when the Greys are running multiple experiments with humans on different facilities, the reptilians and humans will go out of their way not to be around the Grey or the human. So it's a scary scenario in itself.
Well, thank you, Mr. Montaro, for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show. And thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks.
Great. Oh, let me plug something right quick before I forget about it.
Yeah.
There's a new survey on the iCross site. It'll be posted. I don't think it's actually posted yet. November Hansen, who is our research specialist, she's in charge of all research. She's our Oregon State Director and in charge of all research for the organization. Everything pretty much goes through her, or it's going to go through me, her, or Jason, but she's in charge of all this. She just put out a new dream project. Matter of fact, I was taking it before the show. It's very interesting. I'll have to get y'all a link and get it posted, and y'all need to go over there and take it. what we've been doing as an organization, and we've been setting all these new projects up so that we can find contactees that don't know their contactees. Something no one's ever done before. I mean, we've revolutionized abduction research in the field in ways that no one, I don't think, will ever be able to do. But in these cases, we've taken on a new role, and we are actively seeking contactees. And by doing these things like the blood type study and the gray study and the human study and the reptilian study, the job study, the dream study, there's a couple other studies besides that, we're learning that there are things that you can find in contactees that you can't find in other humans. We're starting to understand, like with the blood type thing, we understand that the majority of contactees are Rh negative, even though the minority of people on the planet are Rh negative, the majority of contactees are Rh negative. So, you know, these are helping us to find contactees that don't know and may never know. Because you got to understand, for us and most organizations, we all agree that 95% of abductees will never know they were abducted. So it's the very handful that get to find out, and there's reasons for that.
Okay, so, well, let's talk about that a bit in detail after the next break. Because I want to read Kevin from Australia, the flash message. He's got a question. The second question has to do with abduction.
Cool.
But first, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. Joe, I got just a couple quick questions for you. You got cut off in mid-sentence about the Grays keeping peace here, and if we didn't, we'd find out who the real boss was. If you could elaborate on who that is. And also, do you think that Grays can shapeshift and are in upper echelons of our lifestyle, running our government and stuff, or whatever, the world? And I'll listen off air. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll start with the last one first. None of the aliens except for the light beings can shapeshift. We already know that. But I will tell you a little secret, and this is something we found out by accident. A lot of stuff we find out by accident, to be honest with you. We thought that the reptilians, the greys, and the humans could shapeshift because that's what we had been hearing all of our lives, and that's how the ancients wrote it. Well, we have multiple abductions where, you know, one alien will come in and take 6, 10, 12 people, sometimes three aliens. Well, I'm talking to a group of gray contactees one day that had been taken. It was a group. I think it was 6 or 8 of them. And there was one alien. But each person described this alien as different to me. Well, there's no physical way to take 8 shapes at one time. So we realized what was actually going on is the grays use your own mind against you. They image it into your head, and there is no way for you to distinguish between what is real and what is not. And we've seen this done on many, many occasions over the years. They can actually come into a whole city and pretty much make everybody in the city see something different if they want to.
So these guys might actually not be any bigger than an amoeba.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're assuming the grays are the grays. And like Kevin said, they could be an amoeba because really what they do is they just make you think. And a lot of times they use your own fears against you. A lot of times what you're seeing is not even coming from them. They're taking something in the deep, dark secrets of your head and mixing it with a couple of things, and it becomes what you're seeing. And it's not, of course. What you're actually seeing is a 3-foot, 7-foot, or 9-foot gray.
All right, we have to take a break. You can finish with that on the other side of the break, and we have a question from the flash message. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. Joe, because of time constraints, we're going to need you to move on to answering the question about who's really in charge.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when we come back. You know, what's funny about this is we talk about the grays and who the grays work for. The grays work for what most people would call the light beings. Light beings is not an accurate description, but basically what these are is energy creatures. They seem to be able to travel in time and space without spacecraft. They seem to be able to create by thought and will, not just pretty much anything. And everyone's book, based on the way we were all raised here on Earth, they would be considered a god. There's just no other way to put him into our culture because their technology is so far beyond technology now. It's part of them. It's who and what they are. And so really, I mean, this is a race that seems to be able to move through time and space without any effort at all, cross through dimensional planes without any effort at all, seem to be able to exist in multiple locations and at multiple instances. And from what the Greys say, they didn't so much create the Greys. Well, they kind of did create the Greys, but it was with another species. The Greys became like the Light Beings' galactic policemen. That's really what the Greys are. And regardless who you're talking to out there, most of them all agree that's what the Greys do. They keep the peace. Apparently, when the Light Beings came here from whatever galaxy they originally came from, which maybe it's the one we're eating right now. Remember, the Milky Way is in
30 seconds, Joe.
Yeah. Well, make it quick, guys. The Light Beings are the ones that seem to be overseeing everything. The Greys seem to work for them.
Okay. Now, we want to wrap up with this question from Kevin. What are your thoughts on so-called abductions? Is it sleep paralysis, or is it the leftover effects of some type of magnetic interference? Also, have you done scans of the locations where these abductions have occurred and found any traces of mercury?
Well, I can't tell you we found any traces of mercury. I can tell you that you can rule out sleep paralysis and stuff like that because the majority of abductions that happen when people are awake, not when they're asleep. That's an old wives' tale. That's an old thing from way back in the day. Even in the Betty and Barney Hill case, they were driving home from Canada. The thing about it is most abductions happen when you're awake and usually in the daytime or when you're doing other stuff. It's not like when you go lay down in bed. They do happen when you go to sleep at night, but in most cases, that's not how they take you. It's not, you know, they really want you in a different mindset than just waking up from a sleep. So usually they take you at different times during the day. So that's how we knew the rule out sleep paralysis, because like I said, the majority of abductions happen while you're awake. Probably 70 or 80% happen while you're actually awake, not while you're asleep. So now when I say awake, that could be in the middle of the day, the middle of the evening, wherever you are, just, you know, airplanes, anywhere. It doesn't really seem to matter. Prison, they'll just take you. If they want you, they'll take you. How they keep you blocked out from everybody else is beyond me, some kind of perception filter or something, but they just take you when they need to take you, and it's usually when you're awake.
All right, so what about interference, leftover effects from magnetic interference?
Now, there has been places where there's been interference, but to be honest with you, a lot of times when we come across magnetic interference, it's because it was a military abduction, not an alien abduction. In the old days, we used to think that there was some kind of magnetic field that was making your watches screw up and your digital stuff like that. It's actually not a magnetic field, so it's some other type of field. They don't know what it is because it didn't have any measurable, anything magnetic was measurable, so it was some other kind of field. But we have military abductions where, like, one of their craft will be hovering over a car. And parts of the car will become magnetic, like the antenna or parts of the trunk, sometimes the little name tags, will come magnetized from being exposed to this. It's like if I don't know how many of you know about electric magnets, but if you run the two wires through the coil, you can make anything become a magnet. Well, a lot of types of metals you can make become a magnet. Basically, I assume it's the same thing, and eventually it dissipates and the charge goes away. But it does seem to happen under military abductions. It doesn't seem to happen under alien abductions. A little different.
All right. Now, you mentioned on your website there's something new about for contactees, and but what is the web address?
Well, the primary web address is www.icar1.com. You can always find it there. Also, both sites are up. So there's www.icar1.com, but there's also www.icar.homestead.com. Two different things. It's the same organization, just one's an old site, one's a new site. And we post information on both sites because we use both sites. The new dream study will be coming out on both sites sometime this week. I got to give November a call. So she called me Sunday and I had a chance to call her. But when I call her and she gives me the okay, it will be posted. It's a very interesting, it's going to be a very interesting study and the questions are great. I've been taking the test and they're great. And I think y'all are going to like it. And it's going to give us a whole lot of information. And please, remember, go to the site, take the other studies. If you are a contactee or you've been abducted, I'll go take the different studies, check them out, read them, because not only will you get to give us your information, but you learn as you're reading through these questionnaires. They're quite long. They're usually at least 75 questions, and it really makes your brain start to think. So, and it's what they're there for, guys, to help educate us and everyone else on what ET may or may not be doing here.
What do you hope to find out from this study?
I hope to find out that we're not cannon fodder. Kevin, to be honest with you, I'm hoping to find out that all of this leads to something for mankind, because frankly, if I was to go with my instincts today and the information that we've got at hand so far, I would say that all hell is going to hit the handbasket soon enough. I couldn't tell you when, because I really don't. The way they view time and the way we view time is two entirely different things. But I do think that they have plans for us. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. I mean, a full third of contactees have the Holocaust dream, which scares the bejesus out of me. And what's funny about the Holocaust dream, that it's not big tidal waves or destruction or any of that. It seems to be a little bitty pandemic, a little virus let loose on the planet that, guess what, contactees and at least some military seems to be immune to. But nobody else on the planet seems to be that way. So most of the contactees that talk to say there's between 9 and 11 billion people when this happened, only about 2 billion survived. So is it ET related? Is it something the contactees are picking up on our future? I have no idea. But I got to say, it's a freaky little weird dream. And enough contactees that have had it that we have to take it serious, because there's just too many of them. They describe everything just too similar, and we don't make none of that public. It's when you hear someone describe this dream for the 50th or 100th time, you're like, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Down
mm-hmm.
to newspaper headings, guys. It's way more detailed than we talk about, because we can't give those details out because it would be too hard for us to see who's lying and telling the truth. But it's quite a bit detailed, and it's really weird, and it's really freaky to listen to these people. I haven't had that dream myself, so I don't know.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you for being with us. As always, it has been fascinating. And you know what? We made it all the way through the show without my technology or yours being attacked.
I'm amazed. I was on my laptop tonight, too, so I'm amazed.
You're on the laptop now?
Yeah, I'm actually on the laptop talking to you.
Oh, well, your audio is great.
Oh, it's a high-end laptop, but mm-hmm. I'm always a little leery because it is a laptop. It's a quad core.
Well, my laptop saved us, and so I have no bad things to say about my laptop. It saved us when the server went down here. But it's all working again, and everything went fine, and everything on your side of the thing went fine, and I'm just glad. So, Joe, if you will, stay on the phone or on the line with me here for just a moment while I bring this in for a landing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Joe Montaldo. He is the director of ICAR. You want to check that out, ICAR1.com. And let me make sure of that. Joe, is that correct, ICAR1.com?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And check that out. And there's a lot of good information over there. Also, UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Carries the Kevin Smith Show, so it's got to be great. You want to check that out. And if you're in New Orleans, check Joe out. All right, that's going to do it for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.